This episode is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. For a free trial and 10% off, visit squarespace.com and enter offer code PRESSROW at checkout. A better web starts with your website. Go ahead.
Hello, this is the Press Row podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. All right, we are back. It is the Press Row podcast for your Friday, September 5th, 2014, and I am excited. I'm always excited to do this show, but I am particularly excited because for the first time in the two-plus year history of the Press Row podcast, we have Rob Jones, the senior producer from the NBA 2K team, joining us on the Press Row podcast. Rob Jones, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Rich. It's fun to be here. We're fans. We listen to you guys. I'm not personally weekly, but I get everything in terms of a digest, in terms of you know, what you guys are talking about and what your concerns are. So we're really, you know, we are definitely happy to be part of this conversation here today.
Awesome. So, I mean, we'll just start off by saying I'm a big fan. Anybody who listens to the show knows that I am a big fan of NBA, the NBA 2K franchise, not just, you know, NBA 2K14. It really, I mean, I've been playing NBA 2K for many years, and some of my all-time favorite games, not all-time favorite sports games, but all-time favorite games have been NBA 2K, in particular 2K 11 and 2K 12. But even last year, you know, the launch version for the PS4, as anybody who listens to the show knows, that I am a junkie with my career. I've played multiple seasons. I love it. So I'm a big fan. And so that's another reason that I'm just so excited to have you guys here today. So, but before we get into a lot of the specifics on NBA 2K15, I want to get to know you a little bit more, Rob. How long have you been at 2K, and like, what was your path from you know, for basically, you know, the start of your career to get to the position that you are right now as a senior producer with the 2K NBA 2K team?
You know, I started as an engineer who decided to take, you know, because of my passion, I decided to take a QA analyst position on the Madden team a long, long time ago. Worked my way up to producer there at EA. I spanned the 96 to 2000 years over there. And then I was briefly at Retro Studios in Austin. And then when Greg Thomas here, the president, told me, you know, about this opportunity to come back and be part of the NBA team, which was my original passion because that's what I had played my entire life in terms of a real sport. I jumped at it, you know, getting back out to California and working on an NBA game is like, you know, for me, it's everybody's dream, or should be everybody's dream.
So your role as a senior producer, what does that mean? Like, what do you do? What are your responsibilities?
Well, you know, this year I've actually taken a slightly different role. I've been succeeded up to last year. I was a gameplay director on the game. This year I've been succeeded by Mike in that particular function. Whereas I've taken more of a kind of a long-term strategy view to what we're going to do going ahead, and as well as being, you know, the direct liaison and dev team to you guys. Now, I still have some day-to-day game responsibilities, you know, in terms of, you know, one of the things that I'm passionate about is the shoes in the game. So that's one of the things I'm actually working on. But it's mostly like, hey, you know, where are we going with the franchise, and what, you know, where are our features evolving to, or what are brand new features that we can bring to the game in coming years, and what is our strategy to develop those? That's kind of been my focus this year. In years prior, you know, I've done gameplay, you know, I've done all kinds of stuff. I mean, the original idea for my career was something that me and Eric Benesch were really passionate about, you know, a few years back with the regular upgrades and all that stuff. And it's evolved into what you see now as the team has taken it on.
So let's talk, before we get into NBA 2K15 for the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One, let's talk a little bit about NBA 2K14, in particular the launch version on the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One. I don't know the specific sales figures, but I do know that looking at the NPD charts, NBA 2K has been a terrific seller. You know, in the sports game development world, you know, like there's FIFA and there's NBA 2K. Like, you guys are kind of like the rock stars of sports game development. So, I mean, obviously the game sells great. You guys are highly regarded for how you put your, you know, your game together. So looking back at the launch of the PlayStation 4 and the Xbox One versions of NBA 2K14, what were your biggest successes with that game? What did you get right? What did you really nail with your launch version?
Well, I think that the first and foremost thing is that in terms of next generation experience on those two consoles, NBA 2K14 stood at the forefront of what people expected out of the games that were going to be on a PS4 or on an Xbox One. I mean, the first time I saw the visuals internally, I mean, my jaw dropped, you know, and we followed that up, I think, with great concepts and delivery in terms of gameplay, visuals, presentation, and modes that, you know, that were brand new and delivered a completely next-generation experience for the game. So if you were buying NBA 2K14 on PS4, even if you were coming from the old-gen version from the year prior, you know, you were getting a brand-new experience. And if you were somebody who was just going out to get that game that really was going to showcase why they purchased that console, NBA 2K14 was that game. And so the team is really, really, really proud about having done that.
So what were your biggest challenges, or what didn't go as well as you'd hoped to with NBA 2K14?
Well, you know, essentially when you have, you know, a year, a year and a half at most, but specifically let's talk about the last year, the year, you know, that you start when you finish 2K13, you know, delivering two separate games on two different levels of consoles with consoles who, you know, you guys know this. I mean, the SDKs, the kits, the development kits that we're receiving are changing and being optimized as we go along. Yes, we have targets, but, you know, but we're still trying to make sure that all that stuff comes together. Is, you know, it's extremely, extremely challenging, especially when you take on the idea of delivering modes that we had never done in the games prior. So, you know, my career had, you know, there was a basis to the game, but we had never done a story mode. We had never done an RPG kind of concept with that. My GM was a brand new imagining of franchise mode that was created to really open up that market. I mean, you think about it, you know, franchise mode games are generally kind of a niche product in terms of, you know, there's people who are really hardcore about that full control, and then there's a lot of people who don't play it. So there's always that argument on, you know, does it really have a place in a console? It's more like of a PC thing. Well, that said, you know, we took on the whole story mode thing. I mean, we had more animation and story elements than many of the games that focus specifically on RPG type stuff in our game. So the challenge was, how do you deliver all of that with all the what the workload is? So I think what ended up happening for us is we delivered a great experience. We delivered a game that we are all proud of here. And at the same time, you know, rushing to get that out, to get it out on time. You know, there's some areas where we, you know, we always wish we could have had a little bit extra time to polish more or to get some of the bugs that then crop up on you because you don't discover them, you know, out of the product. But in terms of standing, in terms of standing the test of time, I think that, you know, all challenges aside, I think we still delivered a great product.
Hey, before we get to a couple of the tough questions, I did want to take a second here and mention that the Press Row podcast is brought to you in part today by Squarespace. And Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, and online store. As I've talked about here, we got the PressRowPodcast.com website up and running really quickly and easily with Squarespace. They got a very simple and easy way to put sites together. It's a really beautiful design. You just drag and drop content right in. You can plug in all sorts of stuff, you know, Twitter and Facebook and PayPal and all these cool things. You just plug them right in. You get 24/7 support through live chat and email. They have people in New York City and in Dublin. So if you're like me, you're a crazy person, you're up at 3 o'clock in the morning and you're trying to, you know, make sure that you can embed a video the right way, you have a little trouble, you can give them a call and they can hook you right up. And it's cheap, right? Plans start at $8 a month. And if you sign up for a year, that includes a free domain name, which I took care of by signing up for a year and getting PressRowPodcast.com. They got responsive design. So like most people who use their iPads and their tablets and their cell phones to browse the web, you get that really cool responsive design built right in. You don't have to do any special HTML5 coding or anything. And they've got some cool ways to do online commerce, do an online store. Every site comes with an online store, and you can do what I'm going to be doing soon through the site, selling some cool Press Row Podcast t-shirts that people keep asking me about, and I have to get on that. So, hey, Squarespace, you can start a trial with no credit card required. You start building your website today, and when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you go to squarespace.com and use the offer code PRESSROW to get the Press Row Podcast special 10% discount. We thank Squarespace for their support of the Press Row Podcast. Squarespace, a better web starts with your website. So, I mean, we're going to get this out on the table now. One of the big controversies last year in sports games in general, but in particular with NBA 2K14, was its use of VC, virtual currency. And there's, you know, for years there has been various sort of in-game, you know, currency in different modes. You know, EA started it with Ultimate Team, and a lot of sports games have very similar versions to that. But VC in NBA 2K14 was basically, you know, in every single aspect of the game. And there were many people who complained that they felt like you were trying to put a, and not you particularly, Rob Jones, but, you know, NBA 2K was putting, you know, core gameplay behind, you know, virtual currency, making it difficult to do certain things without either paying additional money or grinding more than they ever had to. So basically, I mean, I'm sure you guys heard a lot about it. What was the feedback you heard, and what's your overall take on how VC was implemented in NBA 2K14?
Well, I think the concept behind VC isn't very different than what you said, which is, you know, you play, you earn experience points, and you move on. I think that at games in general, I mean, all of the games that I ever played growing up, you know, the grind was the grind. I mean, you know, whether you were an RPG and I needed, you know, a gazillion, you know, pieces of gold so that I could buy that great sword, moving on, or, you know, I mean, I've played games that had me do tasks that really took a lot of time and to some times were frustrating. But I think that's part of what created me as a core gamer. So put that aside, you know, I think that VC in general was meant to not be viewed necessarily as, hey, here's a currency where people are going to, you know, are going to plop down additional dollars all the time. It was meant to be, hey, how do we keep track of your progress? How do we, you know, and how do we then have you use your earned experience, per se, in the different modes? Now, what I think was the issue was, one, you know, in some modes, it kind of doesn't make strategic sense. I mean, it they, you know, just because of what that mode required. And so what we've spent our time doing, especially for this year, after listening to our community, is trying to figure out how to better figure out, A, how are you earning? You know, what's your time worth in terms of your return on time spent? And does that make sense? Because, yes, when you do go from being a straight quick game or league-type sports game or franchise-type sports game to be in a game that's trying to offer an RPG experience, well, you also better learn how long should it take a person to get to where they expect to be great or expect to be good or expect to, quote-unquote, get to the end of the mode, you know? And so I always think about it, and I think that that's what we push here. We try to think about it as, hey, how much time am I investing and what am I getting out of it and what's worth what? And if you look at VC in 2K14 and then you look at it in 2K15, you'll see that what we've learned is, hey, you know what? VC is not meant to be something that impedes you from going from A to Z within the product, you know, but it is available, you know, for those guys who decide to purchase VC. It is available for them because they want to customize themselves outside of the realm of what we've given them, or because they want to get to a particular place faster than we intended them to get within a regular playing structure. And then obviously going back and looking at things like, you know, doing basic functions and like, you know, I listening to you guys, basic functions in my GM and saying, hey, you know what? It just doesn't make sense. It shouldn't live here, you know, and therefore let's not have it live here. So what you'll find is, yes, the community came back to us and they were loud and clear, and you know, and we spent our time making sure that it's not viewed as an obstacle. You know, it's just viewed as your leveling currency is the way I want it. I mean, if you look at other games, they have multiple currencies within the game. One is your experience points, and then you know your secondary thing may be gold, and that's something that internally we've tried to stray away from, you know, for whether it's right or wrong, we've tried to maintain a single entity. And in listening to you, since you didn't play outside modes, your VC earn was fine because you played my career exclusively.
Right. Exactly.
And I think that what happens is that because there's that single currency and because we as gamers, what we earn, we spend. You know, it's like, hey, I got it all. I'm going to use it all right now. And then when you move on to something else and you find yourself without that pile that you had earned, it's kind of tough to reconcile the fact that, hey, I need to budget my way between these modes. And you understand where I'm going with that.
Yeah, and completely. So, and you bring up a great point. Somebody like me, who after a review, I kind of settle into the way that I play the game. In my career, I had no problems with VC because I only used the VC in that mode. But the complaint was, and I'm not going to harp on this, but I want to follow up. The complaint, the common theme I heard and experienced was that because it's a single currency, but it's shared across all of the modes, as opposed to just your my team mode or just your my GM mode, it felt almost punishing because if you're trying to do two or three different modes at once, you couldn't do what you wanted to do. So it sounds like there's a change to how VC is being used this year. Is that a fair statement?
I think two things will happen. The first thing is, you know, my team, if you notice, you know, my team has VC, you know, you can earn VC essentially anywhere, but like my team has its own secondary currency within it so that there's an immediate conversion that the user makes going in there. He knows that he's earning my team points when he's in my team. You know, from the outside, though, you can use VC to either, you know, grab packs or purchase points, you know, that way. And I think that that's really, really, really clear. You know, in modes like my GM and my league where, you know, it's my league has no VC, but like my GM where the incidence of VC is truly, truly elective, the way I want to look, I want to put it. It's an elective thing. You know, there, your VC is going to be used strategically. So, you know, I think that, that users that, that decide to use it will kind of understand it. And, you know, and so really it just leaves my career and it leaves, you know, the store, which is complete, you know, to me, the store is completely cosmetic for the most part. So, you know, people should be able to understand those two things. And, you know, and we'll go with that, you know, and keep an eye open to see if we can further improve that, you know, based on reactions this year.
All right, cool. So let's talk about the game. So you launched NBA 2K14. You have some successes. You have some issues. You know, there were online issues at the launch, but those got cleaned up over the course of the, of you know, the first few weeks. And for the, my experience, has been really stable since the initial issues around launch. So moving into NBA 2K15, I mean, my goodness, NBA 2K is a huge game, right? I mean, you've got online modes, you've got offline modes, you've got my career, you've got my GM, you've got my team, you've got NBA Today, you've got all of this stuff. What is the process you use to design, you know, features, improvements, and updates? How do you go about prioritizing a game as big as NBA 2K15?
Well, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head, right? When it comes to NBA 2K in general, you know, we are a jack of all trades. I remember getting here, and I'm like, you know, it's like, hey, why do we always, I used to always ask, why do we always design new features and then still try to update the old ones to some brand new experience? Because the game kept getting bigger and the team didn't get as big as the game did. You know, but that's just part of the ambition here. So, you know, what ends up happening here, you know, obviously we knew that people playing my player at the time or the experiences that they had with playing Jordan mode and you know, creating a legend.
Oh, you know, God, I mean, love all, those modes.
All of those modes bring in a completely different type of fan who's looking for his own single-player experience and one that kind of progresses through time. And what we found, you know, what we found, especially in the past few years where we've implemented a recording system to find out where people are spending their time, you know, that kind of gives you a nice pie chart at the end of the year as to what we should be working on or what did people like the most, and trying to deliver a mode within within that confine is, you know, essentially what prioritizes. Our list gets prioritized by that. You know, internally, you know, if you looked at our telemetry numbers, you know, areas like MyGM or Association don't really resonate amongst the, you know, 5 million or however many people are actually playing our game. I mean, it's a really small fraction, but there's fans here, there's supporters, there's guys who are just like, you know, like you and I, guys who came up on manager mode games. We right. don't let those die, regardless of how you. Small that population is, because it's like, well, just because, you know, the masses aren't playing, it doesn't mean that there isn't a space for us out there. So, so anyway, you know, you look at it, obviously gameplay has its own entire team. My career has its own entire team. My GM has, you know, has it's a smaller team, but it has a team of very, very ambitious people, you know, people who are born and bred out of a particular mold. I mean, if you think of, you know, one of our senior producers, Eric Benish, you know, manager modes, he's always been the association guy for a reason, you know, because we sit around and we talk about hours invested in games like, you know, Football Manager and online Facebook Manager games, you know, and try to figure out which elements of those really struck with us. And, you know, and how can we bring that to a console guy so that they can enjoy the same experiences that we are, you know, and trying to open it up to more than just us. Because, you know, I don't remember the first time you picked up a manager game, but I know that I was lost the first time trying to navigate the
console. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know? And but the enjoyment you get once you figure it out, once things start going your way, you know, it's really, you know, finding that diamond and then keeping it, because it can provide you an experience that goes for, you know, the full 8 months, as opposed to, you know, most games are 2 months and done, maybe. So, yeah. You know, so our prioritization stems from, A, what are people playing the most? I mean, this year, for the first time ever, my career beat Quick Game. Huh. I mean, my career played games were higher than Quick Games. And that's brand new for us. I'll tell you this.
My probably 250 plus hours in my career probably contribute to some of that.
Yeah, I'm sure they do, Rich. So, you know, so you look at that, you know, you have that, you have my GM, you know, and we know how important online is. I mean, I think that the park was the tip of the iceberg last year. You know, I think that, you know, I've always envisioned this thing where we were all running around as our own individual guys, joining leagues and playing with people that we like, you know, not guys who will shoot every time you pass them the ball.
Yes.
And actually create communities of real basketball players who are going out, you know, in the evening after that they've actually come from the gym, and then recreating what they just did on the virtual court. So, you know, I'm just extremely excited about where this can go, you know. And like I said, you know, yes, you know, were there things we could have done better last year? You know, I believe so. You know, do I think that we're evolving or we're trying to revolutionize what people envision? That's part of making games.
So you listen to your community feedback. What are the themes that you heard that are part of what made it into, you know, NBA 2K15? Any common themes that you're like, yep, we heard you, and, you know, this is how we are, you know, helping extend it, or this is meeting your hopes and expectations, or even exceeding them. What are some of those themes?
Well, you know, first of all, my career success, I mean, your 250 hours just kind of reiterates what we heard, like, flat out. I mean, I was told, you know, I was told that there were things that within the mode, you know, they thought we could have done better, like, you know, skipping cutscenes and things like that. But the flip side was that what we heard was, hey, you know, please don't take the stories and the scenes and the that entire mode out, because if that's not the game again, you know, I don't know how else I would experience NBA 2K. I mean, it's really strange to me, right? Because, you know, you go from a game that is this heavy, heavy, just playing head-to-head competition to people really wanting to live their way through, you know, through my career. So my career was an incredible focus, you know, from our side, because the community, and when I say community, I'm extending past, you know, our hardest, you know, our core guys, and saying the rest of the people that are out there, in our focus groups, everything resounded that the idea behind my career was phenomenal, and that they want to see more, and they would just want to see those things improved, the experience within my career improved. So that was one of our major focuses. The secondary focus for us, not secondary, but a second primary for us, was to improve on the court. I mean, we're a simulation game first and foremost, and we thought that we did a great job last year, but that we, you know, we left a lot of room for improvement, and that's where we focused our energies this year. You'll see a lot less in terms of, you know, flashy new control schemes and things that we can just kind of yell at and say, hey, this is brand new, and a lot more meat and potatoes. Hey, play the game and tell me that it doesn't really, really give you the experience of being on the NBA court, whether it's graphically, whether our presentation improvements, our crowd improvements, the audio, the gameplay, the way it feels, the way it moves, you know, the new shooting system. I mean, that is always primary focus here. You know, if you don't have a good game at the core of it, it's not like, you know, people are going to play that long anyway. So those two things kind of dominated the landscape. And then online, you know, online is the way we experience games, especially people who no longer have the time, you know, or the wherewithal to go sit on the couch with their friends in a room and play together, creating an online experience that is varied and stable is critical to NBA 2K and our success. So we put I don't want to say we loaded our best bullets, but we put our best engineers on it this year. You know, guys who kind of delivered what you saw graphically last year, who are at the top of our engineering chain, this year shifted to creating an online environment that was what you guys expect at launch. You know, that's where we are, I say. I'd like to say that. And, you know, and then creating, you know, my league was created specifically in response to what the community wanted, you know. And so we're to the hardcore community. So we're listening from that standpoint as well.
All right. Well, I'm excited about it, pretty much everything that you said. So I'm going to we're going to get into each of those things. But I do want to say for all the listeners, a couple things that the NBA 2K team is not quite ready to go into detail on until closer to launch is, you know, the improvements to my career and the park. So I just want people to know I'm I'm not just letting that go by without asking follow-ups. But I will say about my career before we move on to all the stuff we can talk about is, you know, it was so fascinating when my career launched last year and you have all of these story modes and the cutscenes and stuff. As I'm playing it, I'm saying, wow, this is really fun. It's funny. It's different. It's the kind of thing that I've been looking for in a sports game that has rarely, I don't want to say never, but rarely been delivered. There have been examples of things like Fight Night Champion and stuff like that. But at the same time, I'm also thinking, how in the world are they going to, I don't even want to say improve, but like, how are they going to take this, you know, next year and the year after? Like, because if they just basically repeat a lot of the same stuff, but then just make more, then people are going to complain about that. But then if they have to completely build a brand new story and a whole new arc, they have to throw everything away that they've done. I mean, boy, there's just so many different challenges and opportunities related to my career. I can only imagine, I mean, I'm sure you guys have a lot of the same thoughts and conversations about those kinds of issues.
Well, let's just say that that team was significantly bigger this year. You know, just because, I mean, you know, yes, we knew that we couldn't bring back the same stuff, you know, and we were, like I said, we were really, really ambitious. We thought that we did something special last year. And this year needs to be as special or greater than that. So, you know, I'm really excited to, you know, to unveil this stuff once we get that green light. Yep. But, you know, there's obviously a strategy there.
All right. Well, let's take a real quick break here. And let's talk about FanDuel. This is it. Finally, it is opening weekend of the NFL regular season. Hooray. It is your last chance to join FanDuel before the opening weekend. And millions of people, of course, play fantasy football, but can you win real cash this weekend by playing fantasy football with your buddies? Well, you can with FanDuel.com. In fact, Chris Prince from Detroit, he's an avid fantasy football player. He's won over $656,000 playing fantasy sports at FanDuel.com. You join him and hundreds of other users who have already won money. That's how it works. FanDuel.com, they're the leader in one-week fantasy football leagues. It's for real money with immediate cash payouts. The money is real. Entry fees start at just $1, and there's no season-long commitment, no upfront fees. You play each week or whenever you want. It's all up to you. You set a new lineup each week, and you win every week if you're good enough. And FanDuel is paying out more than $10 million every single week this NFL season. But you have to play to win, so sign up today. And there's a special offer. If you go to FanDuel.com and you click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, use my code PRESS and sign up now. And as a new user, there's a special. FanDuel will match you dollar for dollar on your first deposit up to $200. That's up to $200 for free. Now, the offer is only good for the first 50 people that use my code PRESS. So don't forget to use my code PRESS. That's P-R-E-S-S. FanDuel.com, where every week is a new season. That's FanDuel.com. Sign up today. All right, so let's talk. Let's start on the court, right? You mentioned court gameplay, big focus this year. Let's talk about that. What are the improvements? What was the focus? Let's start right on the court where it all begins.
Well, I mean, the focus for us was to get things as clean as possible. There are just things that have kind of, I got to tell you, my favorite thing is going into the forums and listening to people say, well, you know, there's things that are legacy that they never look at, and we're like, no, we're looking at them, but this year we really, really focused on getting full solutions to it because, people have to understand that as we work on the core, things that happened in my career are being supported by that core gameplay team as well. So it's not like, when a guy gets injured during a game in my career, that didn't just happen. We didn't just flip a switch. Somebody had to actually do something about it. So the point I'm trying to get to is, this year we actually had an entire year to really go in and focus in on areas where we wanted more responsiveness. For us, that was movement. Movement, not the guy, not the dribbler, because we thought the dribbler was better. We can always improve them. We thought that the dribbler was good. But we thought that when you were off ball, specifically playing defense, whether you were on the ball handler or on an off ball guy, that we wanted more responsiveness because that translates to when you're playing in the park. It translates when you're playing in my career. So movement was key, and we transitioned everything into the system that drives the ball handler right now, and that gives us way more control out of what type of movement they're getting, when are they getting, shifting, planting, and actually feeling appropriate from a physics standpoint. We came up with the new shooting system that we've already detailed, but essentially it comes down to a change, not necessarily a change in philosophy, but more of a need to make the game feel the end result feel more in the user's hands and less in what we call a dice roll around here. So you've heard this. Essentially, we take all those factors that go into a shot, and then we create a window of timing, and that window shrinks to be really, really small or really, really wide based on how good or how open of a shot you're taking at that particular moment in time. So it's not really changing what the user knows in terms of a simulation result. The way it's changing things is that it makes it where if you time your shot right within that small window, your chances of making a shot are a lot higher. So, that comes back to those situations where, you were playing with guys rotating the ball absolutely correctly to the best shooter on your team who is Kyle Korver or Ray Allen or one of those guys. And then the quote-unquote dice roll would have you fail because, that shot is normally just a 65% shot. So, we wanted to take that kind of out of the hands of that role and more and put it more into the user's hands. Additionally, collisions, whether you were hitting a defender that was playing defense on you or going to the basket and trying to dunk and getting what we used to see as resolutions that didn't make a lot of sense, in terms of the result that you saw in relation to the animation that you saw didn't make a lot of sense. And we wanted to handle that completely differently. So you'll feel collisions and the results are going to be right in line with what your eyes are seeing. So, hey, I hit a guy right in my path. He doesn't let me get to the rim and I missed the dunk. That makes sense. If I hit a guy and then I continue for an easy walk in the park layup and then I miss it because the game calculated that the impact should have affected you, that doesn't explain much to the user, and those are the types of things that we wanted to fix. But I can go on. I mean, a completely upgraded AI system, both on offense and defense. If you watch any of the videos, you'll see how much smoother the AI is moving around. That comes from us now having much better context in terms of how you move, how quickly you want to change speeds based on the particular situation that you're in. Rotations are way better. Closeouts are a lot more fluid and timely. Offensively, the AI has multiple team sets, offenses, much smarter about when to break a play and take advantage of you. It's a completely restructured game experience, and when you combine that with the full body being absolutely perfect this year, much better spacing, you know, I think that people will be extremely excited about what we're delivering on the court.
Now, one of the things that's always talked about with NBA 2K are the controls. And there, you know, over the course of the last few years, there's been some shifts in how things are done. What is the control scheme like this year with NBA 2K15? Is it exactly the same? Are there significant differences? And if so, what are some of those differences?
So the control scheme is exactly as it was last year in base. There are some overlaid additional controls that users have asked for and that we gave them. So the one I want to bring up more than anything is controllable pass types. So you'll actually have full control over lobs and bounces as you play. But the control scheme, you know, it evolved to what we have last year, and it was a gradual evolvement, you know, evolving to that point. But we did most of our work refining it and not changing it. So if you played before, you know, you'll immediately find yourself at home with our game this year.
Now, one of the things that has recently come out is there has been a restructuring of the way that players are rated. Was that a result of some of the changes you have made on the court, or was that something you wanted to do? And maybe you could just sort of explain why that is and sort of what the core, you know, what the core changes are to the way the players are rated. Because obviously player ratings, that's a big deal with people who like NBA games. How's this guy rated? How's that guy rated?
Well, there was a fundamental change that we wanted to make right at the beginning, and we drive... The way you have to look at it, we drive what the ratings are going to be based on what we're trying to achieve on the court. And one of the things that we found is that we didn't have enough granularity in certain disciplines to really mimic a player's ability and his tendencies. One coach was telling us recently a story about Caron Butler and how they had played Caron Butler and he had like 22 points one night against them. And, you know, and then they went and did some analytics and found out that if you could get him to dribble, you know, he went from being like a 60% shooter to a 12% shooter. And so the next day, they just ran at him and forced him to put the ball on the ground, and he had like no points that night. Like, you know, he couldn't, you know, he could hit the broadside of a barn that specific day. So, you know, but one of the things that we realized, you know, even before we talked to this coach, is that we weren't really able to differentiate a player who was good off the dribble versus a player who was good at a standstill. Not as well as we wanted to. And not only couldn't we differentiate their ability as well as we wanted to, we couldn't differentiate their tendency as well as we wanted to do those things. Hmm. So when we expanded the ratings, it was so that we could get players to have a better tendency and a better result at doing like individual areas within the game that were previously lumped into one big shot tendency. Let's say that, for example.
Interesting.
I'm hoping that helps.
Yeah, absolutely does. I mean, and it's interesting that you say the ratings are changed based upon how you feel the players should behave, which is an obvious statement, but yet, like you say, when you get into the specifics, sometimes you realize that certain things mean different things for different people. So it's interesting how you attack that.
Yeah, and I tell you that is always a challenge for us, for the simple fact that if, you know, a lot of times you're trying to figure out whether you can even get that data, you know, so that you can populate those ratings and be accurate, you know. And thankfully, in the past few years, you know, there's been so much more work being done in terms of that type of collection. So we can actually find more of that stuff. But yeah, that definitely was a key driver in why the ratings changed this year.
All right, so let's get into some more of the modes. Obviously, MyGM is a big deal. It is a, correct me anywhere if I'm wrong, it's a offline only, really deep general manager mode, multiple seasons, that is brand new this year. What is the reason for the creation of MyGM, and basically what has you personally so excited about it, and what do you think the fans are going to really enjoy when they dive into a mode like MyGM?
Well, you know what? The guys here have done such a great job with key components to MyGM, which, by the way, span my league as well. So, you know, those fans of my league should be happy that they're getting all of this stuff, both on, you know, on any mode that has a manager backend to it. You know, that will span in there. But, you know, MyGM, I'll start off with this. The first thing is creating MyGM into a story, something that you know, somebody who casually steps into it can be kind of swept into, you know, is something that I think is the ultimate goal here. You know, getting that core manager style game into core manager style game into something that everybody wants to play, because they feel like, hey, you know what, I'm advancing, or this is fun, or I love this whole balancing concept. But, you know, I'm going to go into a few of the details, and then, you know, you can jump in wherever you want to. I mean, I'm really excited about the fact that, you know, the owners change. They change their goals throughout the time, you know, and owners of that particular franchise may change as well. So having the fact that, you know, that's an ever-evolving target, instead of me having to leave a place to get a different challenge, the challenge will actually change just because that's the nature of evolution, of humans changing based on what they see your team's ability should be. So, you know, the fact that I get upgrades, I'm a sucker for games that have upgrades. I mean, I no lie, you know, I am. I mean, you know, I will tell you, my favorite story is always, like, I hate racing games, and yet I played through Diddy Kong Racing because the doors were locked. Does that make sense?
Totally. Yes.
I played through the mode because the doors were locked, and I did not like the fact that the doors were locked. So my whole thing is that whole concept of continuously upgrading and discovering new things and new abilities always drives me in games. So I'm excited by that. I'm excited by the fact that I can finally control the simulation at a deeper level than before, adjusting rotation minutes, adjusting in-game strategy, individual strategy. I mean, I was playing last week, and, you know, I still haven't figured out exactly how to make it always work to my favor, which is, you know, which is usually what I can do after playing a game enough times. You know, I haven't been able to turn it out so that my strategy adjustments allow me to win every simulated game. So I've actually had to go back in and jump in and finish games out in order to get the W. But that whole idea of being able to control the changes and how the simulator reacts, based on my slider adjustments, my game planning adjustments. That's big. That new injury system is absolutely phenomenal. I think it's going to change the way people envision it. I don't know if you've read about it, but it has durability, factors for different parts of the body. You know where a guy is more vulnerable, and once he's hurt there, you know that you need to protect it more. It goes directly into how you train that particular person in between games and in off season. The pro scouting, the fact that we're actually simulating a college season behind the pro season, just so that you can actually get realistic updates on prospective draft choices the following year, is absolutely crazy to me. Hmm. I could go up and down that list. Those guys have done a phenomenal job this year, and people, people should really commendate, them for it. I'm looking forward to playing the final product. You know how that goes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we could spend an entire show on each one of these modes. So, but what's the difference between my GM and my league? I know they're different. I know they have a lot of differences. But like, basically, if I'm just looking at, do I want to do my GM or do I want to do my league? Which way would I want to go if I wanted to do one thing or the other?
Well, I think it's simply, if you're a guy who believes, if you're going to role play yourself as a beginning general manager at a particular franchise who wants to improve at his discipline throughout time while playing a manager mode, while managing all the aspects of their team, then my GM's for you as more of that individual experience. And if you're trying to run a league that has franchise elements that you can customize exactly the way you want, I mean, down to, length of schedule or the teams that are involved and how hard is it to make trades. I mean, all of that, all of that finite control that the hardcore guys want, my league is for you, especially if you're going to share that amongst your friends. So, there's 30 of us. I mean, when I was in college, that's all we did. I mean, we ran our own leagues. I mean, from freshman year in college, and this is dating me a lot, we played an Intellivision basketball league every night. We tracked it on paper, and that evolved to Madden, that evolved to, every sports game that you could think of. Every year we had a different one. Well, my league is for that crew, those guys who want to get together and set their own community rules, because we had our own community rules for sure in those games, and go about running that league and then still having those elements that make the entire managing process fun, kind of be an underlying core.
And, one of my all-time favorite experiences in games was NBA 2K, I believe it was 11, it was 2K12, excuse me, that had the Legends Challenge with all the legendary teams. And then when you won the challenge, you unlocked the ability to put it into the association. And I believe that my league offers you the ability to take legendary teams and plug them into the league. And to me, personally, for what I like, and it's just funny how many different people like to do so many different types of things, but that is an example of something that I think is just fantastic. I love that idea.
Oh yeah. And so the great thing for us is that not only you can bring the classic teams in, for people who are fan of the EuroLeague, you can also bring those teams in. It's fully customizable with whatever team is available out there for you.
I love that. So another, and I mean, hey, let's just be honest, right? I'm the one who gets to do this interview, so I can talk about stuff that particularly interests me, right? Another thing that I love is online leagues, and I was in several NBA 2K online associations in the previous generation, and technically there were online leagues with the launch version on the PS4 and the Xbox One, but it wasn't something that to me and to, I think, a lot of people, and I'm sure you heard some feedback, felt like a particularly complete or viable option. So what's happening with online leagues this year? Are there online leagues? And if so, are there any changes or modifications to how those are being put into the game?
Online leagues are back. Last year, the biggest problem was that, and we found this out later, is that they actually just didn't work well. So we spent, like I said before, online was a high priority. So we spent most of our time on making sure that the mode works. And we also additionally added features that were required that people had asked us that weren't part of last year's online league customization side. So, things like bringing in a custom roster, changing playoff lengths, whether you have playoffs or, trades and things like that. Mm-hmm. Those are all customization elements that are within the online league this year. But again, the biggest thing was providing an online league environment that worked for guys like you who really wanted to be part of that.
Right. So like with online leagues, for example, can I join a league with three or four of my friends? And are we playing in a full NBA? Or if I've only got three or four of my guys, is that the universe of the league? Has the core structure been modified? Or is it, how are the basics work with online leagues this year?
So it's 2 to 30 teams. You can actually customize the season length and trades. And play alongside your friends, but I pardon me if I don't have this on right. I don't have this direct in front of me right now.
Right.
I believe that the league is based on a 30 team schedule, so the NBA schedule.
Nice. So I can be with four of my friends, and the rest of the teams can be CPU controlled, for example.
Correct.
Oh, I love that. That is so good because. Again, I tell you, like being in an online league is there for me. Again, personally, and I'm certainly not speaking for everybody, but for me, if I'm playing in a league and I know that it's got the persistence of, I might play most of my games against the CPU, but knowing that a couple, two or three of my buddies are out there too, and that I might play them head to head a few times, and I might meet them in the playoffs, it just feels a lot more real to me. And so knowing that that's back in that way in NBA 2K15, to me is huge. And I know to a lot of the listeners is huge because, so many of the listeners to this show are core NBA 2K fans. So that's very exciting. Other online features. I mean, you said, online is the biggest it was a big focus this year. What are some of the other, online either improvements or modes or things that we can expect with NBA 2K15?
Well, let's start, the most important thing. I think you're going to expect higher stability from our side. We re-engineered, both our matchmaking, our delivery systems. One of the biggest things that is great about this year is that, every online service that I've ever known at some point will have a failure, whether it's a maintenance or an actual drop. We're all not exempt from that. But one of the biggest things that we did is that we compartmentalized each thing so that systems can go down without bringing down the house, which is awesome because now if something, happens to our My Team server, that doesn't mean that, my career players will be affected. So the nice thing is that, not only, because it's broken down that way, now something can happen and the rest of the world is still okay. So that's a major thing for us. And that's a huge change for us this year. The second thing that we did is, we built a complete new suite of monitoring tools into the system so that as soon as something happens, we are flagged here. Instead of having to hear it from the community, the game itself is always playing and then reporting. We actually have a system here that plays like a user, believe it or not, like a user online. And therefore, if something happens, it reports back immediately as a user would. And that's how we, that's how we built the entire testing side of this year. So the biggest thing is obviously going to be stability, but I think, better matchmaking and then, and the other thing is you know, we have a brand new website where if something happens, we're actually generating a code that will let us know immediately why something went wrong. And that means that our response is going to be way faster than ever before. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that it's going to be 100% all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing will ever go wrong. But I'm here to tell you that if something does, you know, we're going to, you know, we'll be, our reaction to it will be way better than what you've seen in the past.
Well, all right. We also know that my team is a very popular mode. Unfortunately, we can't really talk about the updates and improvements to that because that's going to be coming out in probably a week or two after this show launches. So Rob, let's get to the last couple things. And again, we could have spent an hour on each of these modes. When sports video game development, I think to me it feels like there's a lot of misconceptions that some fans have about the people who make the games and the effort or the time or how they go about things. I mean, you've been making video games for a while. You say, you know, you go in the forums and you check out what people are saying. What do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions that fans may have, positive or negative, about you know, what it is to make a game like NBA 2K15?
Well, the funnier part for me is the first one is always the I wish they had spent that time doing gameplay, you know. Whereas, you know, these teams are huge, so the team that's working on gameplay is completely separate than the team that's working on my career, you know. And even if you're taking, even if you took two of those engineers over, you know, that's not their discipline. And so there's this misconception that we are choosing to work on one area while not focusing on the other one. It's not one or the other; it's both at all times. So that's kind of interesting. The second part is. This is my favorite one is, you know, we're not fans, or, you know, none of us have ever played or understand the sport. And, you know, they find that that's quite different in here. I mean, you know, the conversations about NBA, the night before's NBA games dominates the office on a daily basis. You would be surprised by how many people not only know, but actually can imitate everybody's pet moves or the things that they do in games that are here. I mean, you know, I'm letting out a secret here, but one of the funniest things ever, you know, is in 2K7, you know, we mocap a lot of players and we get everybody to come in and do signature shots and get the game as accurate as possible. And in 2K7, we did use a lot of players, and Mike Wang acted out a great number of those guys in the league, literally could figure out what their shots look like and recreate them. You know, Mike isn't necessarily a guy who was, you know, who came out and played professional basketball, you know, but he understands the sport like no other. He understands what that balance is, and, you know, and brings just a level of passion. And that's the main thing. There's a passion here. 2K, you know, I hear the whole thing about, you know, we are pushed by, you know, a machine. We're here to make money. We're here to make games. And we're here to make a great NBA game, and everybody here is passionate about the league in a way that's somewhat a little bit scary, to be honest with you. And what comes out of it is that, you know, when the games come out, it's a reflection of our passion for the league. And if we fail in any specific facet of that development, It hurts us before it hurts the customer, because, you know, because we're the same guy. I mean, in our off season, you know, we're still playing sports games, and that means that we're playing NBA 2K, we're playing FIFA, we're playing, you know, we're playing Madden, you know, whatever our passion is. you know, but mostly you'll see us on our own game because that's what we like to do.
So, most of the team making NBA 2K15 seems like is behind the scenes, right? I mean, you do have guys like yourself and Eric and Mike who have gotten, you know, face time out there when it comes time to talk about the game and promote it. But recently, right. there have been a couple of additions to the team that have actually been like reported on in you know, places like Operation Sports and such. Couple of folks have recently joined the team, like Scott O'Gallagher coming over from the NBA Live team. You know, yep. Nino Samuel Dzar coming over from just doing some work with you and now officially on the team. The timing seems a little strange to be bringing in guys, you know, sort of late in the development cycle. But what do guys like that bring to the process? And was there a specific sort of opportunity that you had to sort of bring on additional voices? And what has that done to the makeup of the team and to, you know, how the game is coming together both now and sort of future NBA 2K games?
Well, I'm going to start with a little nugget. You know, Ryan will probably slap me on the hand later. Just because we announced it recently doesn't mean that it happened recently. So I'll just start there. You know, you can slap me. Yeah, I can get slapped later on, but I'll go with that. The second thing is that, you know, anytime that you can inject talent and passion, you know, into this team, that's really been the strength of guys, you know, our president and our company has been to recognize that people are bringing in, you know, a particular love for NBA. And they're adding into it. I mean, you know, we added one of the community guys last year was a programmer. You know who he is. He's Leftos. And, you know, the guy's that he's got the loudest voice in the company. No question. Loudest voice in the company. I couldn't do the interview in my own office because he sits right behind me. But the point to that being that, you know, his passion, I mean, we got into an argument the other day about something that I saw in the game that I thought that was wrong. And he said, look, you know what, if you don't give me hardcore facts, you know, don't come in, you know, don't be the whining gamer that everybody else is. I want the facts, you know, and I was taken aback. And then I went back and I delved deeper and I was like, yeah, I'm man enough to admit that I was wrong here, Leftos, you know. But the point being that there's no way, you know, if you're given the opportunity to add great talent, that you won't do that. So, the work that we've done with Nino is been great, you know, and it's definitely there was definitely a reason for which we wanted him to be part of this family, and you know, and we respected Scott. We knew Scott before he was an NBA Live person, you know. It just didn't happen at that particular point in time, but that opportunity arose and we took it because, you know, smart people realize that a stronger team is a stronger team.
Awesome. Well, Rob Jones, senior producer, NBA 2K15, we could go on and on, but I want to respect your time. Thank you so much for coming on today. We really appreciate it. We'd love to have you come back on closer to launch or right around launch to talk some more about the game. And definitely in the future, we really appreciate your candidness and just appreciate you know, the enthusiasm you bring. So thank you very much. Congratulations and good luck on a successful launch of NBA 2K15. It comes out on October 7th, 2014. So as this show airs, we are basically a month away. So not a whole lot of time left, and we're all excited. So good luck, and thanks for coming on the Press Row podcast.
Thank you so much, Rich. And like I said, you know, I'm open. You know, I can't always, you know, be perfect in every answer. You know, and I don't think that anybody's perfect. But you know, we will do whatever we can, and we'd love to come back at any particular point in time.
Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast brought to you by Operation Sports. We ask that you please subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher and the Windows phones. We also ask that you give us a rating. That really helps us a lot. We also ask that you please follow each of our panelists on Twitter, and they are as follows. Polygon's Owen Good at Owen Good. Pasta Padre's Brian Medai at Pasta Padre. Polygon Submit Sarkar at Submit Sarkar. That Sports Gamer's TJ Lowerman at That Sports Gamer. US Gamer's Cat Bailey at The Underscore Cat Bot. Operation Sports Chris Sanner at Chris SNR. And Operation Sports Steve No at Steve Underscore OS. And of course me, Rich Grisham at Rich Grisham. So thank you so much for listening to the show. We really appreciate it. And we really want to thank the great people at Operation Sports for making this show happen every single week. So thanks. We'll see you again next time.